Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Hey guys, welcome back to Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. We are coming to you from New York this week. This week I had the pleasure of interviewing Brock Pierce, the chairman of the Bitcoin Foundation and one of the key players in the EOS token issue, the largest ICO in history. We also interviewed Crystal Rose, the founder and CEO of a company called Sensei, which issued an ICO, the Sense token. So we're going to be talking to them. And our old pal Alex Lightman will join us back on the show, at least for the first half as well. But before we get to that, there is a few announcements. In the news this week, of course, we have the Facebook hearings at Congress. Mark Zuckerberg presented to Congress a couple of days ago. By all accounts, he did reasonably well. I don't think the discussion on data privacy is going away anytime soon. But Zuckerberg presented himself well enough that the market responded with a 5% increase to Facebook's share value after being plummeted over the data privacy issues. And I think this is the last time we're going to be discussing data privacy. As more and more of our data is out there to connect us to the digital world, this issue is surely going to be come up again, for sure. Also, PayPal has entered the debit card fray. They're looking more and more like a bank every day. But PayPal's objectives here is by issuing a debit card and check deposit capabilities, they're looking to access the unbanked market in the United States. Remember, about 20% of U.S. households are currently unbanked in the traditional sense, or underbanked in that they don't have a traditional checking account. Most of this is because of two primary reasons. One is the lack of identity verification capability, people that don't have a passport or driver's license, and secondly, the fee structure. So PayPal entering the fray there. Wells Fargo is under pressure again this week with a $1 billion fine potentially from the CFPB. Obviously, they've been going through some issues over the last couple of years, and CFPB's response to that appears to be a massive fine. So we'll see how Wells wears that. And NAB in Australia is in the news over a multi-million dollar invoicing fraud scheme, which NAB employees were involved in, apparently getting kickbacks on vendor deals and so forth. So pretty serious stuff. There's also, we see Ripple has invested $25 million of their XRP token in the Blockchain Capital Fund. So that's in their Blockchain Capital's latest $150 million fund. So we see good continued activity on the ICO token and cryptocurrency side. Now, before we get to the interview with Brock, we do have a few conference announcements. Obviously, this week, the big conference for New York, at least, is on the 18th, is the Empire Startups FinTech Conference. And we also have EFMA doing their thing this week in New York. But for Empire Startups, you have at number 26, Pedal, Frank. But the big one is at 3:35 on the 18th. You'll see our good pals Bink, who'll be demoing their technology behind their startup. And of course, we had on the show not that long ago, but we had Greg Gormley, the CFO and co-founder of Bink, on the show talking about that. So check that out. If you can get to Empire Startups to see their demo and support Bink, we'd appreciate it. Also, the Mobile Payments Conference early bird registration is open until April 30th. Provoke listeners save $200 when they register at mobilepaymentsconference.com using the code MPC18FIN. You know, we, Jason and I, as I mentioned last week, we did a live episode of Breaking Banks at their conference about a year ago. So it's good to see them still in the action. April 25th, I'll be in Beijing with Huawei talking about Bank 4.0. And then April 27th, the morning of, at the Deutsche Bank Asset Management Conference in Berlin. So welcome back to Blockchain Week on Breaking Banks. We have some stellar guests for you coming up this week. It's at this juncture I'd like to introduce my old pal Alex Lightman, my co-author of course, Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane, top 10 North American bestseller. Alex, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thank you, Brett. Thanks for having me on the show. I love your show. I guess this is the third time I've been on, third time's a charm.
There you go. And you're in jolly old England today.
Yes, I'm in London in Mayfair, next to Berkeley Square.
So what are you doing in London?
I'm working as the CEO of Token Communities, which has a number of interesting crypto and blockchain deals for both corporations and also starting to do things with governments. There's a bit of a mad rush created by Brock Pierce when he planted his flag in Puerto Rico and went on RT during the restart week that Brock and Crystal created. And right after that, I think 11 governments that I know of contacted various people and said, wow, if Puerto Rico can be the crypto capital, why can't we? You know, we're better in this way or that way, or we're different in this way and that. What's the plan? How do we get a plan made? And since I write technology transition plans for governments, some of these people contacted people who knew me. And so all kinds of exciting things are happening. So there's Brock and Crystal's influence on Puerto Rico, which has, let's say that's X. I think that their influence is probably 10 to 100X on countries that now think that the game is afoot. What is that? Isn't that what Sherlock Holmes would say to Watson? Watson, the game is afoot. Well, the crypto game is afoot.
Absolutely. And, you know, fitting that you're, have you been down to Baker Street yet, by the way?
I have indeed, yes. In fact, I now am in Marylebone. So yes, I'm a couple blocks from the proverbial Baker Street where fictional Sherlock Holmes supposedly lived.
Of course, you know, the address where Holmes is supposed to live doesn't exist in Baker Street, and it's a coffee shop or something, I think, if I recall
correctly. Yes, that's right. But it's still there's a little plaque for it. And also, Madame Tussauds is just a few, just a block or so away. And there's plenty of other things to see on Baker Street. So yes, if anyone from the show wants to come have a coffee, let me know.
So I want to find out a little bit more about Puerto Rico and why that was significant. But before we do that, let's invite Brock back on. Brock Pierce, he's the chairman of the Bitcoin Foundation, advisor to Blockchain Capital, the founder of EOS, the largest token issue in history, I believe. Brock, welcome back to Breaking Banks. Great to have you back on.
Well, always good to be here. Thank you.
Now, tell me about what happened in Puerto Rico. And why don't you jump in, Brock, with this, and then Alex, you can sort of reframe this in terms of the significance of this event.
Well, for me, it started as a teenager. You know, Puerto Rico is forgotten by many Americans that it's part of the United States. You know, it's so often that I talk to people that they didn't realize that this is, you know, some part of the United States, and that Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens, and that you don't need a passport to travel there. You know, they often confuse it with Costa Rica and call it Puerto Costa. And on a map, they can't identify it. You know, Puerto Rico in many ways was the first state that isn't the 51st state, but the forgotten state. And so I ended up down there as a teenager a little bit, you know, fell in love with the sort of enchantment of the island. And then fast forward to getting into the Bitcoin space, banking was a challenge back in 2012 and 2013. And so one of the things that I focused on is, okay, if banking these businesses is going to be such a challenge, you know, well, can I establish a bank? And so I started looking at buying state chartered banks, federally chartered banks, understanding credit unions and co-ops and all the things that might be out there. And then said, well, wait, I'm a hacker. Is there a back door? And then I started thinking about Guam and the U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico. And not long after having had that thought, I was connected with you know, one of the key individuals down in Puerto Rico related to these tax incentives, the 20 and 22 Act. But I wasn't really interested in the personal tax benefits. That's not what motivates me. I was interested in, you know, banking opportunities in Puerto Rico, and that eventually did lead to us establishing what's known as an IFE, which is a financial institution of sorts in 2014. So I've been operating on the island to a small degree over the last 5 years. And that led to conversations with a bunch of key partners saying, I think that Puerto Rico is going to be the place to move in 2018. You know, if enough of us are able to go there, we can make a meaningful difference. And those, you know, tax incentives are going to be a great way of incentivizing leading, you know, thought leaders that possess intellectual capital, human capital, and financial capital to come to a place as a group. Then the hurricane hit and you go, well, I guess late 2018 isn't the time. They need our help now. So much for plans, time to accelerate the timetable. And so we moved a group of us to Puerto Rico last year, probably you know, more than 50, maybe even 100 of us. And there's many, many more on the way. So, you know, Puerto Rico is a place that still is in, it doesn't have its basic needs met. There are still people on the island without electricity and not a small number. You know, it's still in a state of emergency. It still needs first responders. There's still a lot of help needed down there. And I, you know, at this point, find myself living a life in service and so as great a place to serve as any.
Absolutely. Well, now, when you talk about the attractiveness of Puerto Rico and setting up a, you know, essentially a virtual bank there, is a key driver of this financial inclusion?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what's beautiful about Puerto Rico is its size as well. I mean, it had 3.5 million people. It's down to about 3 million now, which is a very bad thing. When you have a brain drain or a loss of that intellectual capital, that human capital, and that financial capital, because a lot of the first people to leave are the ones with the means to do so. So it's not even representative probably on a numbers basis what the impact of that is. But the only way you combat a brain drain is with a brain gain, by bringing back as much of that intellectual, human, and financial capital as you can. Its size is interesting. So we just held an event there called Restart Week, which had four sort of anchor events and 50 or 100 smaller events that all came together around 1 week in San Juan. And we're doing the next Restart Week on the west coast of the island, May 6th to the 13th. The reason for having moved west is the west side of the island has a population of 300,000. The main city in the center is Mayagüez, which has a population of 100,000 people. Of those 100,000 people, 20,000 of which are college students, and it's where the main university and schools are. And so if you want to think long term about how to have a, you know, a big impact in a place like this, clearly you want to go where the next generation is, and that being the college students that are going to be hopefully inspired to have their own visions and entrepreneurial dreams that hopefully we can, you know, enable as angel investors and mentors, advisors, VCs, et cetera. And you know, we can facilitate those types of things. But with a population of 100,000 as well, it makes it an excellent place to try and see what you can do to really have a positive impact on a group of people. And it doesn't take that many of us with the sort of skills and opportunities that we're able to bring to have an impact on a city that small. So Mayagüez is where we're essentially setting up shop for the foreseeable future to bring the entrepreneurial dream and, you know, highly skilled jobs back to Puerto Rico.
So getting back to blockchain and, you know, your work recently with EOS and so forth, where does blockchain fit into this solution set?
Well, I mean, that's the blockchain, like the internet, is a technology that's going to be pervasive in a way that it touches everything, you know, over time. Obviously, we're seeing how that sequence is, and the first examples of that were in finance. And as you pointed out earlier, the real big kind of opportunity there that, you know, you want to resonate with everyone is that you've got about 3 billion people on the planet that don't have access to financial services, another 2 to 3 billion with limited access to financial services. The blockchain, you know, one of the earliest use cases was in this area of finance. It has the ability to democratize the global financial system in a way where every human being on the planet can have equal access, and it's the least fortunate billions of people that are going to benefit the most. And so it's obviously not just touching finance anymore. There's You see lots of interesting innovation around healthcare. You're seeing lots of interesting innovation around next generation energy grids. And so when you think about infrastructure in a place that's been hit by a hurricane like this, you know, the incumbent infrastructure is in many cases broken or old. And this is an opportunity to build upgraded infrastructure where needed. So I think, you know, the blockchain has the potential to play a role in many aspects of Puerto Rico's restart.
Now, in terms of the work you've done at EOS and elsewhere, you talk about distributed applications on top of these architectures, but you know, part of the problem with financial inclusion is just solving identity and getting people access to a basic value store, a bank account. We saw India solve this with the Aadhaar card, but in the US, where 20% of households are excluded from the financial system, that's largely because they don't have a driver's license or a passport, so therefore can't go through the formal, you know, wet signature process for opening a typical checking account. So, you know, is identity a key element of sort of a core application of blockchain for changing lives of people in places like Puerto Rico?
I mean, it has been known to be a kind of holy grail sort of challenge within the sector. And over the last few years, you've got a number of highly, you know, qualified and well-financed groups trying to tackle the identity issue. Identity has not been tackled, but I think that that's something we're going to see start coming to fruition this year. And as identity and the blockchain start to get solved, yeah, then you know, again, the blockchain has been around for, call it, 10 years. And a lot of that period has been sort of prototyping and tinkering, a lot of, you know, call it ideating and thinking of the ways that this technology could have an impact. The execution and the delivery of those systems, because this is, you know, this isn't simple tech, has, you know, been the challenge. And we're just now starting to see, you know, the user numbers and the user adoption numbers around the world starting to accelerate. I mean, this had kind of been a really a geeky thing for the last, call it, 9 years. And it's really only starting to get into its full stride of, call it, mainstream awareness and adoption in this, call it, the last year.
All right. Well, I want to talk about that in a moment. But before we do that, you know, in terms of your mission at Puerto Rico and so forth, and Alex, maybe I'll get you to jump in here. One of the things I found most unique about Brock's pitch around this is the way he thinks we need to redefine people's contribution to society, particularly around the definition of a billion. Do you want to take us through that, Alex?
I can tell you Brock's definition of billionaire because I did a document for him, the first draft of the white paper for Brock to give away up to $1 billion, which I called endowment, E-N-D-A-O in capital letters, M-E-N-T, DAO, standing for Digital Autonomous Organization. And Brock is the person who has popularized more than everyone else put together that the new definition of billionaire is somebody who positively impacts the lives of more than a billion people. Brock is changing the standard for the wealthiest 2,000-3,000 people on Earth. We had one new billionaire emerge onto the scene every 2 days on average last year. This is a world in which we're, the class of billionaires is increasing faster than pretty much any other group. But what are they doing with that money? I think of it as the boring billionaire problem. You have all this money, but what do you do with it? Does it make a damn to anyone? Gandhi had a saying, which I thought was quite amazing. And he said, consider the poorest person that you know, and then ask yourself whether your next action will make any difference to that person. And being around Brock and thinking about this and thinking about how can you give away $1 billion so it goes to the end users, it inspired me to make both of my keynotes at Restart Week in Puerto Rico. And the first one was, how do you deal with the 885 million people living in extreme poverty, don't have sufficient nutrition? And how do you make charities more effective? Charities in the United States alone give $390 billion a year. Lotteries generate $70 billion in the United States alone. So there we have almost $500 trillion just in the U.S. And we have multiple trillions of dollars that aren't effectively used. And what I've learned from being around Brock and seeing how smart he is about just coming up and being an innovator is that we can take things that are 90% finished. And Peter Drucker said that the entrepreneur is someone who takes a system that's 90% finished and then finishes it that last 10% and makes a big difference between the incomplete system and the complete system. And so I've been inspired by Brock and Crystal to basically say, here's how we finish charities, which right now in many cases give only 3-4% of the money that they raise to the end user group, the target people. And similarly, lotteries are a bit broken. So there's a way to fix them using the blockchain and crypto. And also, we now have the ability to eliminate poverty. I can tell you how. It's very simple. We give people a mobile phone with a crypto wallet that's tightly integrated with two-factor biometric authentication. And this authentication can be done and be its own identity system, like you were talking about before. And then we can have airdrops so that anybody who wants to give money to people at the end group can basically do airdrops of tokens that will have increasing viability and fungibility and be used by the end users to purchase food and clean water and solar and solar-powered water pumps and all these kind of things. So we can directly enable people who have money, middle-class people, wealthy people, even poor people, by American standards, can contribute to the people in extreme poverty. And it's my belief, and I'm organizing a conference in Cairo, Egypt, sponsored by a big telco that does billions in revenue in June, about blockchain for good and how to eliminate extreme poverty by 2022.
Okay, so just sort of taking a lead from that, Brock, in terms of changing the lives of a billion people, where does blockchain have an advantage in this respect? You know, talk about some of the stuff that is being commercialized now that has moved from proof of concept that you see as being able to make a difference.
Well, yeah, I mean, the big change is, like with the internet, you know, the internet basically eliminated borders and has enabled a free flowing of sort of information or data around the world in sort of real time. And it's had a lot of obviously major impacts on the world around us. The blockchain is doing that for many other things, including finance in many ways. And so we're moving away from a world of sort of GDP to a world of GWP.
What's GWP?
World versus domestic, you know, global.
Right. Okay.
And you need to start thinking about the world from that sort of perspective. And as you start looking at other, you know, successful sort of technologies, we're living in exponential times, and where you're seeing not just blockchain technology continuing to innovate, but you're seeing it across everything. And the intersection of all those things is what's most interesting. And so you see businesses that go from 0 to 1 billion users is happening faster and faster, from the Facebooks to the WhatsApps to, you know, what are these things that come next with these new capabilities that, you know, these other technologies such as blockchain are here to enable. You know, we can see user adoption of things. You could go from 0 to 1 billion users today in a year. I think that's feasible at this point. Someone will accomplish that probably in the next year or two, would be my guess.
So talking about some of the tech behind this, or some of the sort of macro level changes rather, you know, we're not just talking about sort of global commerce, are we? We're talking about digitization of everything, value chains, artificial intelligence, all of these types of things. Do you think that this is sort of a restructuring of the way we think about economies, moving from physical commodities to digital?
I do, and I think that there's an opportunity in all of this, and that's the reason why I'm doing the things that Alex was just talking about, is, you know, we have an opportunity to rethink a lot of, call it, old ideas. And, you know, in some instances, there's an opportunity to, you know, rethink those systems from the ground up. And what an incredible opportunity that is. Some people would call it crazy, but to contemplate, at least to intellectually engage yourself in this idea of, can you build a world of abundance? You know, is the zero-sum game, is the scarcity model one that, you know, has to exist? And I'm not saying whether I'm not making a statement as to one being possible or not. But it's certainly something that it's worth devoting time to if you're in a position to influence the system architecture.
Right, so the fact that we throw away tons of food and grain annually, more efficient energy systems, all of that can be included.
Yeah, and I know in my own individual life that I can make a difference every day that I get up. I know I can make a difference, and the question is how big a difference. And you know, when you look at systems, you want to try and see not what are the symptoms or the problems. You want to try to understand the root cause, and you want to think from a systems sort of architecture perspective. Again, truly bottom up build. And that's what we're going to see. The simplest way that I like to explain what's happening with blockchain technology is it's that everybody understands the internet, or at least uses it to some degree today, for the most part. And that is that the internet, when it was being designed in the 70s and 80s, was designed without security. And that's because we didn't have the computer processing, you know, ability at the time to implement the known cryptography needed to secure it. And so as TCP and IP and all the different protocols and systems are being developed, you know, things are layering on top of each other. And then by the time that the cryptography was accessible, we had already built too much. It was too far along. And so the internet was built with a...
So that retrofit of crypto didn't work.
It's been a flawed foundation with, you know, band-aids and duct tape and things all these years. And that's why we're seeing so many security problems and banks being hacked and SWIFT being hacked and people being hacked and security, credit card information, all your ID. These problems are not going away. They're only going to get worse because it's a fundamental problem in the foundation of the internet's architecture. So think of the internet of information, or that inner, you know, the information superhighway, as an insecure data transport protocol. What the blockchain is doing is turning that insecure data transport protocol into a secure one.
An immutable, auditable.
Yeah, it's an upgrade of the entire internet. So think of it as the real internet 2.0. It's going to be the secure internet.
Okay. And so, hey, listen, Brock, I'm aware of the time, and I know Alex has got to drop off because he's got to go to Christie's auction house. So why don't we have a quick break here? And then after the break, you can introduce us to Crystal and we can talk about EOS and what you're doing with Sense. And Alex, you know, thanks for joining us all the way from London.
Always a pleasure. Three of my favorite people on one call in one place. How could I say no?
Thank you, Alex.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Alex. We'll go to a quick break now. Sure. You're listening to Breaking Banks, and we'll be back right after these words from our sponsors.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
The Voice America Live Events channel is here now to showcase your corporate, individual, or organization's live event. Visit voiceamerica.com/live events to see all of our past live events and find out more. Whether it's a multi-day conference, special speaker, or single-day event, we've got everything to make your event a success. We can do a few hours or a few days. For more information about taking your event to the next level, call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or email info@voiceamerica.com. Again, that's Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or send us an email to info@voiceamerica.com. Voice America is where you are and where you want to be. Join us around the globe as we broadcast live from some of the most interesting events available. Don't forget to view all our live events, including on-demand access to past events that you may have missed, by visiting voiceamerica.com/live events.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Now, before we get back to talking about fintech, I want to take a quick moment to tell you about eFinancialCareers.com, one of the supporters of the show. They're the world's leading career site for financial service professionals for over 15 years. eFinancialCareers.com partners with leading financial and fintech firms, so your resume is seen by all the top companies and recruiters in the U.S. and abroad. Now, as we all know, financial services is a very dynamic, ever-changing industry, and eFinancial Careers provides valuable resources from helpful career coaching to interview strategies and tools that keep you up to speed and well-informed with what's happening now in the industry and what it means for your career. Registration's free for financial professionals. Make sure you take advantage of all the resources they have to offer. So check them out, eFinancialCareers.com.
Thank you.
listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Hi, you're back with Breaking Banks. I'm Brett King. My guests on the show today talking blockchain in our blockchain month. We have we just had Alex Lightman on from London. We've got Brock Pierce on and Crystal Rose. So Brock, could you introduce Crystal?
Crystal is my wife. And Crystal has been an entrepreneur since she was in high school and building businesses her whole life. She's been a programmer and a community organizer. She started LA Startup Week and has been a constant giver. And as we got to know each other and eventually married in our most recent years, has been focused on how artificial intelligence can bring people together and share human knowledge where needed in ways that hadn't been possible previously. And that eventually has evolved into becoming a major player in the blockchain space and the integration of those two sectors and where they come together. And also she's been, she's the chairwoman or chairman of Restart Week in Puerto Rico. And my much better half.
Crystal, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Thank you. So good to be here. And thank you for the great introduction.
No, well, you know, I didn't think I could do as good a job as Brock in introducing you, given he knows you better. So that's great. But now you're working on, you just did a token issue with Sense, but tell me about Sense and your role there as CEO and what your objectives are of this. And particularly again, you know, where blockchain fits into the solution set.
Absolutely. Well, I think blockchain inherently is the right solution for most of the types of networks that, you know, have been built today on the internet. And we're going to see every sector becoming affected. I started the company Sensei 4 years ago, and our main goal was to connect everyone together frictionlessly and without intermediaries. So Sensei connects everyone through any messenger to freely chat and transact with each other. We started with Sensei coins as a method of value exchange, and you can think of that like Reddit karma points. Really, it was a method of gratitude and a value system that people earned by helping. And as we evolved, we were very fortunate to be close to a lot of the really amazing technologists in blockchain. So our advisors helped us to reformulate the way that we had seen the company before. And we moved from a centralized system, which is just simply a relational database that holds everything, to a distributed system so that we could empower people to really truly own their own data. And so today, we let people transact in a token called Sense. Sense is on the free market with other tokens, other cryptocurrencies, and can be freely traded between them. And it also gave us the ability to open up our platform. So we had built really incredible AI-based tools. We provide matching and routing between all types of people, and we scan the chats to understand more about them. So eventually, right now it's human to human, eventually it will be human to bot, and we can become a training ground for AI to get smarter from some of the best minds in the world. And really everyone is the sensei. We think of every single person as a valuable person who has knowledge that they can share. And so we wanted to be able to unlock everyone's ability to basically sell their information, create a marketplace for your mind.
And so, you know, with the Facebook stuff that's going on right now, the question of, you know, an individual as not just as a consumer, but as a product, and their data being a product is sort of really coming to the fore. So, you know, talk about how you see people's data being handled in the future. If you're talking about a world of bots, you know, agents, for example, acting on your behalf, sending inquiries, conducting commerce, doing all this stuff for you, how do you actually keep track of all the data that you own and sort of monetize it with the Sense token?
That's the biggest question today. My team recently went out and physically did surveys to people on all different streets and different conferences, and we issued a survey online. One of the questions was, who do you think owns your data, you or Facebook? And about 60% or more now of the people say that they think Facebook owns their data. And that's actually inaccurate. According to the terms, you own your data. And you can even download it. You get a file that tells you every single click you've ever done, every video you've watched, every ad that's ever been served to you. There's a massive amount of data that's being constantly held and you know, scanned across Facebook. So you can take that data and you can own it. If you think about our data being stuck in silos, so we have all of these different networks that we contribute to, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, every blog, anything you've ever done online, it's almost like the issue that we have today with health data, where every bit of your data is locked up in a different hospital or with a different insurance carrier, and you don't really have any kind of control or ownership of that data. When you do get it, when you do download that file, you can do it in Facebook, you get an XML file, it's extremely hard to read. So as a human, it's nearly impossible to do anything with it. So what Sense does is it allows you to make a connection to your data. We started with Reddit and GitHub because our core audience at the beginning are developers. We love developers and we have a platform that they build on. So we wanted to give them a tool that they could find value in the earliest, the soonest. And so all of that data gets analyzed by AI and it becomes more usable. And so in a distributed system, your data really lives in a lot of places. You can think of it kind of like the file sharing with Napster, how all of the music was held across many, many systems and computers. That's the beauty of decentralized or distributed systems, is that it isn't held in one singular place. What we need are tools to be able to access it. So if you have the ability to access your data and then do what you'd like with it, which Sense enables you to sell the data. So let's say that you wanted to have a person or even a business contact you. You have the right to say, yes, I'm happy to have Nike contact me about shoes. That's one of our brand partners. And Nike can pay me directly. So rather than that $2 or $4 going to Facebook for advertising, and going directly to the publisher, instead it goes directly to the human who would be selling the data for them.
Now, Brock, coming back to sort of some of the problems about dealing with this amount of data, you know, one of the issues, particularly with, you know, and we've heard, you know, debates on SegWit and other things around the blockchain that powers Bitcoin, for example, but one of the restrictions has been transaction throughput. Now, you've been working on this at EOS, so tell me about the progress you guys are making in terms of the ability to, you know, just actually get transactions through the network.
Yeah, so I don't speak for Block One or EOS, but I can share my view. You have, we've been working on various blockchains now for a number of years. You know, Bitcoin today probably being best described as a store of value, kind of gold 2.0, and that's because of the limited transactional throughput today, and what is true today isn't necessarily going to be true tomorrow. You know, these are systems that continue to evolve and get upgraded over time. But yeah, this, the transaction throughput is clearly one of the most important items when you start thinking about the mass scale, when we talk about, you know, affecting a billion or more people. Transaction throughput, obviously, fees have to be low or non-existent. You can't have friction around accessing a product. If you needed a token to be able to access a product for the first time, that's a great deal of friction in onboarding a new user. If you were building an internet website that required such a thing, you could almost certainly expect it to fail if that was a prerequisite of accessing your products.
It'd be like having to go to a branch and signing a piece of paper to get a piece of plastic that you could spend your money with.
Yeah,
but something antiquated like that, you mean?
Exactly. you know, there's going to be what I call blockchain 3.0 sort of protocols right now. But EOS looks like it'll be, you know, the first of those which, you know, can deliver high transaction throughput. It can do that with no fees. Like if you go to Dan Larimer's previous work, Steemit, STEEMIT.com, Steemit, is not a website, that's a block explorer. That's what the future of websites will look like. They're going to become something more like that. But to access that service, you don't need any tokens. And so EOS was, you know, really well designed to deliver the type of scalability to impact the lives of a billion people. But it won't be the only one. Obviously, I'm chain agnostic. I support anyone that's trying to build systems that can, have a positive impact on the world in a meaningful way. You know, if anyone succeeds in changing the world for the better, we all win. So I'm always here to support everyone that's operating with those intentions.
So I'd like to ask you both this question sort of to round out the discussion, but let's take it 10 years in the future. Let's talk about 2025, 2028. How do you see that blockchain will have materially changed the world?
I think it will have been one of the pillars that has changed the world at that point. I think that we're looking at, I think a lot of, technology is impacting things at an unprecedented rate and timetables that, would have been unimaginable. And we're only accelerating, the most viewed video on Earth is called Despacito, which is filmed in Puerto Rico.
Right, the music video, yeah.
Yeah, it's the most viewed video in the history of mankind at this point, or humankind. The idea of slowing down is what that means. So probably something the world does need, but we're accelerating and we're continuing to accelerate. So I would imagine we're going to be looking at a very different world by 2025.
Well, and I'll jump in to say that AI is the other component of this. So something that will help us accelerate is the ability to provide autonomy through transactions. And that's really the key to getting systems working. So if you think of, and this is a very long-term future, but I want to just point to autonomous vehicles as an example. If an autonomous car has the ability to service itself, drive itself to a place to recharge, pay for that recharge, and the transaction is stored on an immutable ledger, we have both of the worlds colliding, and that's, I think, what really changes everything. So those two technologies together are going to radically transform everything that we do, and it's going to allow for humans to move away from being inserted in the process where we have so much human error and also so much time that it takes to get things done, and allow those things to be more automated.
It's interesting. We had Michael J. Casey on the show last week, and we talked about the same example, the autonomous car that can conduct its own commerce, paying for electricity, road tolls, and so forth. So interesting that one keeps coming up, that we're going to need something like the blockchain or applications like that to deal with a highly automated society, particularly where it's transactional. And the reality is we're going to have to identify things like vehicles that are operating out there, but they don't have a traditional identity, like a driver's license or an ID card that we'd identify an owner of a bank account today. So it makes sense that we need to sort of have a new paradigm for these devices that are conducting commerce on our behalf.
Absolutely. And we see identity as something that's shifting as well. There are a lot of really amazing companies working on identity. We have Civic, who's one of our partners today. At Sense, we have found a way to allow anyone to be contacted through a wallet address. So one of the big announcements we'll be making in the coming months as our product evolves is, first, we are partnering with EOS so that we can provide faster transactions, because when you're working with messaging, you have so many pieces of data that are going through, you need to have a much faster network. And secondly, we want everyone to be able to leverage the anonymity that they are afforded with having a wallet, as well as privacy and transparency. So you can potentially contact anyone on the planet through a wallet address. You can chat with them securely and you can transact with them. So we're really excited to see the future of identity playing out in a way that allows us to connect in a better way.
Now, Brock, just one sort of final sort of question in respect to this. This is more of a sort of regulatory viewpoint. We see various economies around the world quite open to ICOs and tokens. We see in the US recently the SEC taking some pretty clear action against those who've issued tokens. Where do you think this is all going to wash out? And the regulatory response, is that going to limit options for economies in the future if they're tough on ICOs, crypto, and blockchain now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a balancing act, and I sympathize with the regulators. I've spent now many years, educating the market as well as as regulators. I mean, my talk's going back to 2013 when people saying that were saying this isn't regulated. I said, no, it's absolutely regulated by laws from the 1930s and 40s and, you know, so on and so forth. Most of the laws, you know, that govern this, you know, predate the internet. But that doesn't mean that we're not regulated. I mean, the SEC talks about
existing computers even.
Yeah, I mean, they talk about, you know, the SEC says that it might be a security. The CFTC says it might be a commodity. The IRS says it's property. FinCEN says it's a currency. You know, it gets very, very confusing for, you know, an underfunded startup when, you know, the government can't form its own consensus. But, you know, I sympathize. It's challenging, and there are bad actors doing bad things. And so most of what I see is regulators trying to get to educate themselves so that they can perform their duties, and most of it being focused on people that are doing things that are clearly wrong, either because they're bad actors or because of naivety. You know, I feel for them, which is why it's very important if you're playing in this space to make sure that you're very well advised by lawyers. You know, these are serious regulations, and there are, you know, going to be significant actions taken against those people that are, you know, doing things the wrong way. So try to do it in compliance to the best of your abilities always. But again, it's when you're pioneering, it's not always clear, you know, where the lines are. And so, yeah, it's critical that you're well advised. So regulators are doing that. I think it's generally a good thing. You know, you have, you know, when you see these types of returns, like with the internet, you know, call it internet 1.0 in the 90s, you know, when these types of returns exist, you know, all the cockroaches sort of come out of the woodwork, and, you know, they try and prey on people by talking about big numbers and using terms that people don't understand for the purpose of getting them to invest their money, most likely to lose it in a Ponzi scheme, an MLM, or whatever it is that, you know, sometimes a straight scam actually. And so the advice that I give people is don't buy tokens and things you don't understand. We're moving from building businesses to building communities. And so the only tokens that you should want to hold are ones that are, you know, part of a community that you wish to be part of. And that is that it's not about a financial return. You see something that you think is going to make a difference in a world, you choose to get involved. And if that community flourishes, you probably will do well. And it doesn't matter at that point if it goes up or down in the next year or two, because you believe
the goals of the community.
It's Warren Buffett style. Go long in communities you believe in that you think are going to make a difference. That's the criteria that I try to, you know, operate from, and which is very different than what most. And as long as you don't buy tokens and things you don't understand, it's hard to get ripped off.
Yeah.
Don't let people convince you that you're not able to understand it. If they can't communicate the idea to you simply in a way that you can understand, don't do it.
No, I understand. Good. So, hey, Crystal, just to sort of round out the discussion, tell us a bit more about where we can find out about Sensei and Sense tokens and what you guys are doing in terms of your mission and, you know, where you go from here.
Absolutely. Right now we are working on bringing as many developers in the ecosystem on board as are willing to play on our platform. So we have a few hundred people who've signed up, and we have offices in a couple places in the world. In LA, we are opening up our space in Santa Monica. So we are next to WeWork, and we call it free work. Anyone who's doing anything meaningful in blockchain, we're really excited to host and kind of opening up and decentralizing our entire work ecosystem. For anyone who is just interested in checking out the products that are being built and maybe earning some of the tokens, makesense.com is the website. And we're really excited to have all of these new possibilities for people to make and earn tokens inside of all of their messengers. So Facebook Messenger, Telegram, SMS, you can really have access to cryptocurrency very easily through the Sense platform.
And Brock, in terms of your personal mission to help out the folks in Puerto Rico, where can we go to help?
Twitter, first of all, @RestartWeek is a great place where obviously you can build community and stay connected. You can also go to restartweek.org. The next major event is May 6th to the 13th. We're going to try and bring the entrepreneurial dream back to Puerto Rico, and specifically around these 20,000 students, college students in the west of Puerto Rico that historically had to leave the island if they wanted to see their dreams become a reality, because you didn't have the venture funds. You didn't have the entrepreneur. You know, I mean, there's obviously all the talent is there. Puerto Rico has all the talent in the world. They haven't had the tools available. Unfortunately, those are things that we possess in abundance, and we're there to make them available to the next generation of Puerto Rican entrepreneurs.
We would encourage anyone working on any social impact projects to come out, and especially around blockchain, there's so much support that's happening. The first Restart Week had 2,000 people across all of the conferences, about 3,000 total on all of the events. And we're so excited to host again. We have so many different artists and musicians coming out, a lot of surprise guests, and we'll be really just making change. This is about service for this coming week.
Yeah, and we're going there to bring some power to the people in the form of solar and electricity. We're doing that constantly at this point, bringing food to the people, building bridges, metaphorically speaking, potentially in reality as well, putting clocks back on buildings. Puerto Rico needs help. And the thing that I tell everyone that wants to be part of this community is show up, get to know the island, get to know its people, get to know its culture, understand its needs from those people, and bring your superpowers. Your superpowers are those gifts, those skills that you've refined over the course of your life. Like Malcolm Gladwell would say, the things that you've put 10,000 hours into. Come down there, figure out how to give your gift with no expectation of anything in return to help out the people of Puerto Rico. And that's the foundation of the culture we're trying to build. And from there, anything is possible.
Fantastic. Well, Brock and Crystal, thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks this week. We wish you all the best with your endeavors, and we'll include some links to what you talked about on the Twitter feed. But thanks again for joining us on Breaking Banks.
Thank you so much for having us again.
Thank you, Brad.
Yeah, it was great to have you back.
Well, that's the show for this week. Thanks for joining us again on Breaking Banks. We'll be back with another show for you next Thursday. In the meantime, if you get an opportunity, go to iTunes, Stitcher, Podcaster, Google Play, SoundCloud, wherever it is that you get your copy of Breaking Banks from, and leave us a review, a 5-star review preferably, so that helps other people find the radio show. Also, if you've got a particular episode that you enjoyed, make sure you share it on social media. Put on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, get some of your other colleagues involved to listen to the show. That's how we get traction. That's how we get sponsors. That's how we pay for this show every week in terms of getting it out for you guys. So we'd really appreciate that. If you're interested in sponsoring the show, please contact me on social media. And also, don't forget that a number of our co-hosts, JP Nichols, Jim Morouse, Dave Birch, and myself, are all available to help you guys with speaking opportunities, and you can go to provokemanagement.com to check out more about that. So thanks again for listening to Breaking Banks this week. We'll be back with you next Thursday with a brand new show. Thanks again.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.